What are you waiting for? Go on. We all have jobs to do.
Yes!
They shouted and rushed down the closest tunnel entrance as Lindis and Grimmy watched them from behind. Grimmy flicked her forehead.
I have to watch my appearance when we're in public, you know.
I know, Linda said, and stuck her tongue out at him before entering the tunnel herself.
Huh?
Bella muttered and rubbed her eyes.
Weren't we just here?
Karen peered through the layer of mist surrounding his body and traced his hands on the tunnel wall. He hummed and rubbed his chin after sniffing the residue on his fingers.
This looks exactly like the passage we were just in. Then again, everything looks the same down here.
Bella sighed.
As long as we keep going downwards, we'll have to find those prisoners.
You're right,
Karen said and nodded. His hands flickered, and a silver light appeared underneath the duo.
I cast haste on us! We don't want to be the last ones to finish, right?
Bella flew through the tunnels, leading the way while maintaining her invisibility on herself and Karen. They traveled without stopping, passing bustling fairies, until they reached a fork in the cave that split off into two directions.
That way,
they said at the same time. The two of them were pointing in opposite directions.
Who's the fairy here?
Bella asked while pouting.
We're going this way. My fairy instincts are telling me I'm right.
Karen peered down the tunnel he wanted to enter before he sighed.
All right. Your way it is, then.
Nothing good would come from arguing with a fairy. He heard the rumors about their curses. The two crossed through multiple forks with Bella guiding them each time. Karen held a notebook in his hand, scribbling in it while looking up every so often.
This is odd,
Karen said as he flipped back to the previous page in his book.
What is?
We've been encountering fewer and fewer fairies as time's gone on. It would make more sense to encounter more fairies, because the prisoners were supposed to be close to the fairies' living chambers.
Are you stupid?
Bella asked, as she placed her hands on her hips and pointed her chin at him.
Did you forget Grimaldesser crash-landed against the ground? Of course, all the fairies will be rushing outside to see what's going on.
The two approached a tunnel entrance that was twice as wide as all the others. Bella nodded and sped up.
See? We're here!
Karen scratched his head as he followed behind the blue-haired fairy. A bright purple light greeted them when Bella pulled open a door at the end of the passage. Multiple translucent purple spheres were floating in the room. Flowers grew towards the spheres, blanketing the ground, walls, and ceiling. The room extended as far as the eye could see. Karen raised an eyebrow.
The fairies converted the prisoners into flowers? Very interesting. I had entertained the idea of transforming a creature from one kingdom to another, but I never succeeded.
Bella ground her teeth together.
Okay,
she said, and furrowed her brow.
Maybe I wasn't right. But we're clearly the first ones here, so it's our duty to transport the birth flowers out.
Her hand shielded her eyes as she scanned the room.
And knowing Mom, there's most likely some kind of guardian that will appear the moment we touch a flower. Ah, there it is! It looks like a giant spider. How do we do this?
That's easy,
Karen said as he wiped his hands on his robe.
You can kill that thing without hurting the flowers?
Bella asked with wide eyes.
I would never have guessed.
Of course not, Karen scoffed. I'll just teleport the whole room to Konegreisch. Then we let Lindis deal with the guardian at her leisure.
Bella stared at Karen with half-closed eyes and tilted her head.
Do you even see how large this room is? How are you going to teleport the whole thing?
Karen chuckled.
Just watch, he said,
as he placed his right hand inside his mouth. A cracking sound came from his jaw, and his face contorted. He pulled out a bloody blue tooth. A gale swirled around him, blowing outwards. He chanted in a low voice, causing a silver light to spread out from his feet, crawling along the insides of the room while coating the flowers in a soft glow. A torrent of blue light flew out of the tooth in Karen's hand, pouring onto and entering his body. The silver glow crawled along until it encompassed the whole room. The spider guardian twitched and sprang to its feet. It hissed at the duo at the entrance, but the glow vanished before the guardian could do anything, and the room disappeared, leaving a gaping void in front of Bella and Karen. Karen fell to his knees and dragged his body towards the wall.
"Ever since that day, I had to borrow other people's mana to teleport a dragon," he said as he wiped his brow with his sleeve. "I decided to store mana inside one of my teeth over time. 1,000 years, to be precise."
He leaned against the wall.
"Give me a few minutes to recover."
Bella alighted in front of him, landing on his knee.
"Thank you," she said, and knelt, touching her head to his robe. "Really, thank you."
"Raise your head, little one," Karen said. "Humility doesn't suit you. A child should act like a child."
Bella raised her head and pouted.
"And a crazy old man shouldn't be so reliable," she said. "Who do you think you are?"
Karen laughed.
"Come," he said, and patted the space beside him. "Finish telling me about queens and birth flowers."
Grimmy yawned as a cluster of 5 fairies approached him. A layer of obsidian separated his body from the ground as he lay prone. Thousands of fairy heads at the tunnel entrances peered at him, their bodies too afraid to exit.
"Oh, mighty Grimmeldesser,"
the fairy at the front of the cluster said.
"May I ask what brings you here?"
Her body trembled in the air as the dragon's gaze pierced through her. Grimmy's wings flared outwards, and the fairies let out cries as their bodies were blown backwards.
"Do I need a reason?"
he asked. His reptilian red eyes locked onto the trembling fairies. They were larger than the fairies' bodies.
"No, of course not,"
the fairy said, and lowered her head to the ground.
"Forgive my impudence."
Grimmy snorted and closed his eyes before resting his head onto his front claws.
"We will be taking our leave now,"
the fairy said as she inched backwards.
"Forgive our disturbance."
"Wait,"
Grimmy said as one of his eyes opened.
Yes?
Grimmy smiled.
"I want a snack. Get me something. All of you."
The surrounding fairies in the tunnels shuddered as a chill ran down their spines and gripped their hearts.
"If I'm not full by the time I eat all your offerings, then I'll make up the difference in fairies. No humans or demons. They're too squishy and watered down."
Murmurs rose up into the air. The fairies in the tunnels glanced at each other.
"What are you waiting for?"
Grimmy growled. The obsidian underneath his claw shattered as he raised his head.
"Eep!"
Thousands of fairies streamed out of the tunnels into the air, spreading outwards into the surrounding areas. Grimmy yawned again and lowered his head.
"This way,"
Rella pointed. The mist surrounding her body followed her arm.
"We just came from there," Toffle said and frowned. "You're lost. Admit it."
Rella pouted.
"It's not my fault the witch rushed us all in here,"
she said, and landed on Toffle's head.
"Why don't you do something instead of complaining, then?"
"Watch me,"
Toffle said, as her horns glowed green. She closed her eyes, and a spear of wind radiated outwards from her body. The wind howled through the tunnels, forcing the few fairies lingering around to lose their balance and tumble on the ground. A minute passed. Toffle opened her eyes as her horns dimmed.
"This way," she said, and pointed. "I found the captives, but no signs of Karen or Bella. I couldn't locate the birth flowers either."
She sprinted down the tunnels, weaving past the leftover fairies with Rella clutching her horns to prevent herself from falling off. The two traveled past numerous caves and passages until they reached a massive archway with 3 fairies playing cards in front of it. Toffle approached them, still cloaked by Rella's invisibility spell, and drew her sword. She stabbed it between the fairies. A snake made of smoke sprang out of the sword and swallowed the trio before disappearing, leaving behind 3 sleeping fairies.
"It's here,"
Toffle said, and sheathed her sword as she entered the archway. She walked through the dark passage with Rella flying next to her,
and rounded a bend. A soft blue light greeted the two. In front of them was a steep cliff leading to a pit that contained thousands of bodies. The walls were peppered with blue stones that faintly illuminated the captives. They looked sick underneath the dim glow. Tafel wrinkled her nose and held back the urge to vomit. Rella pinched her nose as tears sprang to her eyes.
"This smells so bad,"
she said, her voice nasally.
"Are they even alive?"
Tafel frowned. "I can't teleport this many people," she said, and stepped towards the edge of the cliff. She drew her sword and held it in front of her chest. An orange flame blazed into life on its blade while the mist surrounding her and Rella dispersed. Whimpers rose from the bottom of the pit as the gazes of the captives were drawn to the flames like moths. "Is there anyone who can be counted as a leader amongst you all?" Tafel asked. Her voice thundered in the ears of the captives. Some of them shook. "I may be able to free you all, but there needs to be order." Instantly, a cacophony of noise resounded from the pit. People shouted, begged, cried. Someone shouted, silencing the crowd. The captives' heads turned towards the furthest region of the pit. A man staggered his way to the front, stepping over the living and stepping on the dead.
"My name is Opfern," the man said. "I am the Baron of Blod. Who are you?"
"Tafel Beestick," Tafel said. "The current demon lord." More murmurs rose up, but they were silenced by a gesture from Opfern. The demons on the right half of the pit looked up in admiration and puzzlement. The humans on the left half trembled and muttered to each other.
"How do you plan on saving us?"
Opfern asked as he gestured towards the people in the pit.
"None of us can use magic. The fairies take them away first. Many people here haven't lifted a weapon in their lives."
"How long have you been here?" Tafel asked, ignoring Opfern's question. Sweat rolled down her back as her gaze roamed over the crowd of people staring up at her like frightened kittens in a box.
5 years,
Opfern replied. His stare drilled into Tafel.
"How are you going to save us?"
Tafel frowned. "How do the fairies bring you out of this pit?"
"A group of them come and levitate us with magic," Opfern said. "The ones they take never come back."
"I understand," Tafel said, as the flames on her sword disappeared. "I need to consult with my allies before I can proceed." She turned around and walked back towards the entrance, ignoring the screams and cries echoing through the cave behind her as she rounded the corner. Rella shuddered.
"Can you save them?"
she asked, as she raised a barrier of mist around their bodies. Tafel bit her lip but didn't reply. Rella opened her mouth to speak, but the sounds of fluttering wings cut her off. The two pressed their backs against the tunnel wall as a group of 30 fairies flew past them, all of them carrying baskets.
"Why do we have to do all this work while those 3 slackers sleep on the job? Hush, don't act as if you've never slept on the job either. I don't want to hear that from you, of all people. Huh? Aren't the fodder awfully noisy today?"
Tafel raised an eyebrow at Rella. "Food?" she mouthed. Rella shrugged in reply. Thuds sounded out as the baskets crashed into the crowd of people. The fairies flew back, passing Tafel and Rella, before stopping to pick up the 3 sleeping fairies.
"Hurry, hurry! Don't want to stay here for too long,"
one of the fairies said, as she looped one of the sleeping fairies' arm over her shoulder. The group disappeared from Tafel and Rella's view. Screams and shrieks echoed through the tunnels.
"Oh, it's already starting. Why did the queen tell us to do this, though? Can't they get out through magic?"
one of the fairies asked.
"Don't question the queen. And those were the weakest worms. They can't use magic."
Tafel and Rella had dashed out of the mist barrier towards the edge of the cliff as soon as the screams had started. Their eyes widened at the sight below. Hundreds of people were thrashing on the ground while others were running to the sides of the pit. The baskets lay scattered among the crowd with their lids off to the sides. A few worms slithered through the throngs of people, searching for those who weren't already infected. Only a few men were stabbing bloody bones at the worms and twitching people.
"It was you,"
Opfern roared, as his gaze locked onto Toffel and Rella. He held a rib with a squirming worm impaled on the other end.
You killed us! The fairies never did this before, not until you came.
He pinned the worm to the ground and stomped on it until it stopped moving.
No, Toffel said as she took a step back. I didn't! It wasn't me!
Shun sheathed her sword and took a deep breath as she approached the edge of the cliff.
Stop! Rella said, and pulled on Toffel's robe. You can't! There's too many!
If not me, then who?
Toffel asked, as she jerked her robe out of Rella's grip. I've fought thousands of worms and infected ones in fuselage. I can do this. Toffel's sword glowed red as she leapt into the pit, plunging her sword into the chest of a man who was thrashing against the ground. I'm sorry, Toffel said, as the man stared into her eyes, terrified. White flames enveloped her sword and burnt the man to ashes. She climbed to her feet and whirled towards the next person, her sword cutting everything in its path. Rella fell to her knees and bit her lip. She clasped her hands together.
Please let her be all right.
Her eyes closed as she chanted. A black mist rolled out from underneath her feet and formed a wall behind her, blocking out the sounds of slaughter.
I won't let anyone interfere. This is the most I can do.
The white flame danced along the bottom of the pit, casting grotesque shadows on the walls. It traveled in a spiral fashion, sometimes cutting towards the sides, sometimes bending towards the center. Tears streamed from Toffel's eyes as her sword passed through humans, demons, and worms alike.
Why?
She asked, as her voice cracked. Her movements flowed like water as she slipped through the crowd, leaving a trail of ashes behind her.
Why are they spreading so fast?
Every time she thought it was over, more screams would echo from a different region in the pit, and she'd charge over. The worms entered their hosts and left behind a fraction of themselves before exiting again, seeking the next victim. Others burrowed into the ground and reappeared, striking at the captives on the other side of the pit from Toffel. Time passed. Rella opened her eyes and stopped chanting. The room was silent even without her magic. She stumbled as her stomach sank. She climbed to her feet and peered over the edge, flinching at the soft sobs trickling into her ears. Toffel was sitting in the center of the room with her face buried in her knees, arms hugging her legs. Her sword was beside her, resting on a layer of ash. A group of 30 survivors were sitting with their backs pressed against the walls of the pit, their mouths and eyes wide open, their gazes locked on the demon lord. Linda stood in front of a fork leading to 3 different passages. A trail of unconscious fairies marked the path she traveled to get there.
Looks like the fairy's map was a little off, she mumbled to herself as she closed her eyes.
A few moments later, she opened them and entered the leftmost passage. Her eyes narrowed.
I should reach Stella if I follow the highest concentration of mana.
A quartet of fairies appeared in her line of sight as she rounded a bend. She flicked her wrist, and a shadowy hand shot out of the ceiling towards the fairies.
Their eyes widened as the shadow expanded and slammed them into the ground before they could move out of the way.
Linda stepped over their bodies and continued down the path. She passed through more and more tunnels as she proceeded deeper into the caves, encountering and forcing a few fairies into the ground without hesitation. Eventually, she came to a halt in front of a doorway with a black golem sitting in front of it. A purple orb was embedded in its rectangular chest, spreading a web of lights through its body. The golem didn't react as Lindis raised her arm and conjured a spear of ice in front of herself. It rotated in the air, kicking up the dust on the ground before flying towards the golem. Moments before it hit its target, an explosion occurred behind the spear, speeding it up, a technique she stole from Toffel. The spear pierced the golem's core as if it were butter, causing the golem to topple over. Lindis frowned as the sword made of white light appeared in her hand. She approached the golem, and black tentacles sprang from her shadow to probe it.
Too weak, she thought, after confirming it was disabled. It wasn't even facing the right way.
She stepped over the fallen golem into the corridor behind the doorway. The floor was steep and became steeper still, until the path leading down was nearly vertical. She pushed open another door at the bottom and raised her hand in front of her eyes as a green light assaulted her vision.
Groans and roars reached her ears, as well as a few fairy-like gasps and squeaks. Linda stiffened. Inside the room, there was a gigantic pool filled with green water. Its diameter spanned over 100 meters. Underneath the surface, thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, of worms swam and wriggled, making it impossible to see the bottom. Baskets filled with green spears lined the edge of the pool, while dozens of humans and demons were standing with their wrists and ankles bound by chains attached to the walls. Fairies hovered in front of the captives, but they had all turned around at the sound of the door opening, confusion plastered on their faces. Lindis reacted first, and lightning bolts flew out of her hands towards the fairies. One fairy managed to evade, but in the next moment, she was pierced by a spear that emerged from her own shadow. Linda shook her head after confirming the room was clear of fairies. "So it looks like the golem was made to keep things in, not out," she said to herself as she approached the green pool. "I guess I'm responsible for disposing of these since Ver isn't here yet." Her head turned towards the fettered prisoners. Saliva ran down their mouths as they struggled against their chains, straining their necks towards Lindis. Linda snorted as she backed away from the pool and placed her hands on her hips, facing the prisoners. "You might be resistant to magic," she said, as she stomped her right foot against the ground. A wall of earth rose up in front of the captives before pressing towards them. "But I can squish you to death." Squelching noises and shattering sounds echoed through the room as the moving wall crushed the infected prisoners, manacles and flesh alike. The expression on Linda's face didn't change as black blood oozed through the earthen wall.
"How can you use geomancy?"
a voice asked from behind Linda's. She turned around. There was a red-haired fairy lying on the ground with a hole in her stomach. The fairy that managed to evade the initial lightning salvo. Lindis ignored the fairy's question and placed a finger on the fairy's forehead. A green light enveloped the fairy, healing her wounds. The fairy's eyes widened.
"White magic, too? What are you?"
"You're a primary fairy, aren't you?" Lindis asked. "First one I've seen since I entered this place. You are going to lead me to Stella after I dispose of these worms."
The fairy gasped when she heard Stella's name.
"You're the corrupted one, you dirty witch, you lousy lemon-eyed snot drinker."
She rose to her feet and lunged herself at Lindis, but the elf snapped her fingers and the fairy's body stiffened before falling towards the ground.
"Call me what you want," Lindis said as she walked towards the pool, turning her back on the stunned fairy. "I did what I had to do. Now be a good little child and wait for me to finish cleaning up your mess."
"I've come with an urgent message for the king." Trent rode a horse, shouting as he approached the gates of the royal castle. "It concerns the Pope and the missing prince."
The two guards standing in front of the gate exchanged glances before addressing the oncoming horse.
"Please dismount," one of the guards said. "We'll bring you in right away. The king has given orders for us to take anyone with information about the Pope and Prince directly to him. As a safety precaution, you must leave your weapons and armor behind."
Trent nodded as he dismounted and stripped himself of his equipment. He raised his head and passed the guards his items. His eyes were pure white, with no traces of irises or pupils.
"I just came from receiving my blessing from the spirits," Trent said, taking a step back as the guard's eyes widened. "They'll return to normal in a few hours." "Understood," the guard said, and relaxed his posture. "You must be Trent, then? This way."
The guard opened the gate and walked ahead.
"Yes," Trent said with a strange smile. "I'm Trent."
The guard stopped in front of a metal door.
"The king is inside his study on the second floor."
He knocked twice before opening the door and gestured for Trent to go in.
"Thank you," Trent said,
as he nodded at the guard and stepped inside the room. It was filled with bookshelves and contained a spiral staircase leading upwards, positioned in the center of the room. The door closed as Trent climbed halfway up the stairs. As soon as his head appeared on the second floor, a spear stabbed downwards from behind him, piercing through his spinal column at the base of his neck. His body twitched
and he coughed out a mouthful of green blood before collapsing.
"You're up, sis," a voice said. "Karen told us to be wary of worms and to incinerate the body."
"I know," a feminine voice said as Trent's body went up in flames. "Let's tell the king."
In the center of a dark chamber, a diminutive figure was sitting with her legs crossed. Her eyes flew open and blinked a few times, revealing a pair of irises that shifted colors with every blink. Stella stretched her arms above her head and cracked her neck.
"Ah," she said as she rubbed her temples. "That wasn't very nice of them. Well, it was fun while it lasted."
Her body stiffened.
"Oh?"
Her head turned to the side.
"I know you. It's been a while, Dragon Boy. How have you been?"
Ver stood at the entrance to Stella's chambers with his eyebrows furrowed.
"Care for a cup of tea?"
Stella asked and waved her arm. A teapot that was resting on a table in the corner of the chamber sprouted legs and waddled towards the fairy. Two teacups hopped after it. Stella gestured at a cushion across from her.
"Have a seat."
"You're not going to fight me?"
Ver asked as he approached the cushion.
"Why would I? You were the one that freed me, after all. If you were someone else, I'd dissect you in a heartbeat,"
Stella said, as Ver sat down on the cushion. She raised an eyebrow.
"You seem awfully relaxed for someone who was expecting a fight."
"And you seem awfully cohesive for someone who's supposed to be insane," Ver said, and shrugged as the teapot vomited out a fountain of clear liquid into the two cups. "Why did you imprison Rella and Bella? They helped free you, too."
Stella smiled.
"Imprisoning them was the only choice I had. And I'm not insane. Not at all. Is that what they're saying about me?"
She pulled out three green orbs from a bin and dropped them into her teacup.
"Would you like some? They're quite chewy. I call them tapioca. Such a nice-sounding word, don't you agree? Tapioca."
She giggled as she brought the cup to her lips and took a sip.
"I don't eat bugs,"
Ver said, as he shook his head and picked up the cup in front of him. He sniffed it and tilted his head.
"What's in this?"
"The tears of orphans, boiled with the crushed dreams of the just departed. It's good for the soul,"
Stella said as she chewed on one of the eggs. A miniature worm popped its head out of her mouth as she spoke, but she slurped it back inside before it got away.
"So what made you come visit little old me? You got here pretty quickly, considering the fact you were in the human capital not too long ago."
"I got lost," Ver said, as he took a tentative sip from the cup. "I was supposed to get rid of the worms, but I ended up here instead. I guess that means Auntie got lost too, since she's not here."
Stella's horns glowed red as her eyes narrowed. Her hands clenched, and the cup in her hand squealed before it shattered.
"You really did come here with her, then?"
After a moment passed, she sighed as the pieces of the cup crawled back together.
"It's not fair.
Why does that backstabbing buck cow get all the nice things?"
She pouted and crossed her arms over her chest as her horns dimmed.
Ver stayed silent as he took another sip of tea. "Why did you attack her? After I freed you, I mean. Even if I was hungover, I could tell you were genuinely happy to see Rella, Bella, and Yella again," he said, his gaze locked on the tea's surface. "What happened between you two in the past? Is it really so bad that you have to try to destroy the continent to get back at her?"
Stella tilted her head.
"She never told you?"
she asked, as she poured herself another cup of tea.
"Well, that's to be expected. If I was a backstabber, I wouldn't want my allies to know either. Do you want the long version or the short version?"
"The long version."
Stella nodded and closed her eyes.
"I'll need to cast an illusion to keep that wrinkled tomato preoccupied."
A line of smoke flowed from Stella's hands out the door.
That should do the trick, she said,
and gazed into Ver's eyes.
You're a blue mage. Rella told me. I can teach you a truth curse that you can cast on me.
You'd go that far? Ver asked, raising his eyebrows.
Fairies are notorious for lying, Stella said, and lowered her head as a crooked smile appeared on her lips. I want you to believe me.
Ver nodded, and the two exchanged curses. Stella took a deep breath.
I come from the first generation of fairies. We were born from the flowers that sprouted from Eris' body when she was buried. There were 20 flowers, one for each of us. We decided to part ways and establish our own colonies. I was lucky and discovered the Fountain of Youth. My siblings were less fortunate and eventually passed on. Their offspring were later incorporated into my colony with the condition of surrendering their birth flowers to me. It was lonely at the top, Stella said, and sighed as she stirred her tea. Fairies had developed a bad reputation from the start with our pranks and tricks. The other races learned not to trust us, and I was always suspected when I wanted to converse with them. As for my own children, how can you become friends with someone whose life belongs completely to you? It's not the right dynamic for a meaningful friendship. Lindis, that banana-nosed outcast, was my first friend. At least that's what I believed, up to the moment I was imprisoned. We first met when she came to the fountain and got trapped in my illusions. She told me she was looking for a cure to her condition, and I yielded after listening to her story. She was lonely, never had any parents. Her adoptive mother, which wasn't even an elf, was killed by a bear. A dragon, Grimaldesser, was bored and decided to plant the Elder Lich's soul inside her body because she didn't want to be weak anymore. When her batty bloodline awakened, it conflicted with the Lich's soul, and her body almost fell apart. She needed the power of the fountain to stay alive, which is why I allowed her to stay.
It was pleasant. We used to explore the region together. I'd show her places she'd never been. She showed me some of the more dangerous regions occupied by dragons, Stella said as she popped another worm egg into her mouth. After chewing, she washed the remains down with the rest of her tea. She was too interested in the humans. By that time, our continent had been at war with them for close to 400 years. There were times where I'd leave the fountain and preoccupy myself for weeks to make seeds for more birth flowers, while Lindis did her own things. I didn't know her things involved selling me to the humans. One day, after I had just finished making a fresh batch of seeds, an army of humans were waiting for me. Even when I was under the cover of my illusions, they knew I was there. And they let me know, using Linda's name to bait me out of hiding, saying she sold me out. Stella ground her teeth. I didn't believe them until after they captured me. I was too weak to resist, and my guardians were slain by an ambush. I used a truth curse on them and interrogated them as we fought. Lindis really did betray my trust in her. They managed to defeat me and locked me up on the spot, demanding for me to give up my powers or they'd hunt down every single fairy and present me their heads. I refused, believing the rest of the continent would fight against the humans for my children, if only because of a mutual enemy. Even though I refused, they managed to extract my powers from me, but I infused as much of it with my hatred and bitterness as I could. The results of the forced extraction were obvious, and the group of humans who took my power and drank tea made out of my children's birth flowers gained immense magical powers compared to the other humans, but they sprouted horns and became demons. They were ostracized by other humans, but they were a sizable group and managed to hold their ground, establishing a city around my place of imprisonment.
Stella trembled.
They kept me weak, unable to do anything. A spell formation in the room would absorb all the mana in my body twice a day. Another chain would forcibly inject mana into me to keep me alive. The worst part was, they kept their word.
Stella's horns flared up, bathing the room in a red glow, and the teacup in her hand shattered once again with a pitiful mewl.
Even if Lindis did betray me, the least she could have done was keep my children safe. With every head the humans brought, I could feel a part of me dying. It made my heart ache. The pain was unbearable. They would bring my children in front of the door and rip their heads off while they were still conscious. They'd tell them that it was my fault, that I was the reason why they were going to die so pitifully. I could feel my children's fear within the room, and I'd see it on their heads moments later when they'd be teleported inside, faces still contorted in a silent scream with tears streaming down their cheeks. I couldn't even save their heads because the rats would eat them, yet I still tried every time. I tried, but it never worked.
Tears streamed down Stella's cheeks as she took in deep breaths.
There was a long period of time where they stopped. I was thankful for it. But then they brought hundreds of fairies at once. It was then that I vowed to torture the humans and everything they held precious if I were to ever be set free.
Burr's eyebrows furrowed as he frowned and scratched his cheek. Stella blinked and her horns dimmed.
Not you, of course. I could tell there was something different about you. Something dragon-like. You brought me a feeling of awe and fear rather than resentment and undying hatred. I understood when Bella told me you were imprinted by the matriarch. Everything has an innate sense of respect and a healthy dose of fear for dragons. Those that don't are dead.
Stella smiled.
It's a nice feeling that you bring. Comforting. And it's gotten even stronger since I last saw you 10 years ago. It helps keep my head clear. More tea?
Ver nodded, and the teapot vomited into his cup. You don't know why Lindis betrayed you?
Stella shook her head. It doesn't matter. What's done is done. No reason of hers can ever allow me to forgive her. Do you think I'm wrong?
She tilted her head.
Am I a villain?
No, I don't think so, Burr said. Might makes right. I know Mom and Grimmy have slaughtered countless people out of anger. Dad, too. It's the dead people's fault for being too weak. They wouldn't have died if they were stronger.
Stella smiled. I had a feeling you'd understand me.
But, Burr said and sipped his tea, that doesn't mean I don't feel bad for the people you've killed.
Stella raised an eyebrow. Well, aren't you unexpectedly kind? I didn't expect you to be so sympathetic to the plight of the humans.
Burr shrugged. They have families. People care for them and feel sad when they lose them, just like you did when you lost your children. I realized it in the dream Lindis placed me in for 10 years. How much it hurts to lose people who are close to you. The sense of loss eating away at your heart. I must have watched Toffle, Mom, Auntie, Grimmy, Yella, and everyone else die hundreds of times because of my weakness.
He sighed.
You'd think it'd hurt less after the first few times, but it doesn't. It hurts just as much, if not more.
Stella frowned and stared at the reformed teacup in her hand. Images of her fallen children replayed themselves in her head. A tear sprang to the corner of her eye, which she quickly wiped away. She pouted at Ver.
Don't act so moral and righteous now, you hypocrite, she said. The food you eat has family too, you know. What about all the bear cubs that'll never see their mother again because you got hungry?
That's different, Ver said.
Killing to eat is necessary for me to continue living to keep my family happy. Killing to make others sad is just not nice.
I'm not killing just to make others sad, Stella said and crossed her arms. Although it is a nice bonus. I'm getting revenge for my children.
You've already avenged them, Fur said. I know you captured the demon's royal family. The other humans did nothing wrong.
Stella looked down. The two sat in silence as they drank their tea. A strong wave of magic brushed over them and sent goosebumps down their arms.
Hey,
Stella said, eyes still downcast. Ver looked up from his empty cup.
If I die, will you take care of my children?
She raised her head.
They did nothing wrong.
Ver nodded.
I will.
Stella smiled and held out her hand. A white rose bloomed from her palm, its roots wrapping around her arm.
A reward, she said,
and extended it towards Ver.
For accepting my task.
I don't need a reward for helping a friend, Ver said and shook his head.
Then a favor,
Stella said, and brought the flower closer to Ver. Ver extended his hand, and the flower's roots crawled onto his palm, wrapping themselves around his arm. They crawled along his body until the rose migrated over his heart.
Take care of me in my next life, okay?
Ver patted Stella on the head and nodded before standing up. The mist blocking the door dispersed as he approached it. He walked past the door and rounded a bend. A figure grabbed his arm.
You are not going to fight?
Lindis asked, staring at the rose on Ver's chest. Ver shook his head.
It's your fight, he said,
and gazed into Lindis' eyes. Lindis furrowed her brow but let go of his arm, leaving behind a bloodstain. The blood didn't belong to her or Ver. She passed Ver and continued down the path until she reached Stella's chambers.
Friend, huh?
Stella said to herself, and smiled as Ver vanished around the corner.
There's just one more person I have to get rid of to avenge my children.
She glared at Lindis, who appeared at the entrance to the room.
You.
Ver sat with his back against the tunnel wall. He shook as vibrations ran from the rocky surface into his body, as explosions and crashes resounded in the room behind him. He raised his head at the sound of approaching footsteps. Karen was walking towards him, with Rella and Bella sitting on his shoulders. Toffel was further behind, dragging her feet with her gaze locked on the floor ahead of her.
Karen hummed and rubbed his chin.
We've accomplished the task we set out for. Why do you two look like we lost?
Rella and Bella flew off of Karen's shoulders and hovered in front of Ver.
Is that? Rella asked, and stared at Bella with wide eyes.
The flower blooming on Ver's chest seemed to wave at them, its petals swaying, even though there was no wind.
It is,
Bella said and gasped. She clutched her chest.
He feels like how Mom used to before she got taken away.
Ver ignored the fairies and frowned at Toffel. She had taken a seat across from him, her back pressed against the wall of the tunnel. Her knees were bent in front of her chest, and her head was buried in her knees with her arms hugging her shins. Ver stood up and brushed past the fairies before sitting down beside Toffel. He placed a hand on her head and smoothed out the tangles in her hair. The two fairies exchanged glances before tugging on Karen's sleeve. He shrugged.
I'm going to watch the battle,
he said, as he took a step towards the chamber's entrance. A flood of lava rushed out and nearly engulfed him. He cleared his throat.
Never mind, then. I will not be spectating.
The group waited in silence as the ground continued to tremble and the walls continued to shake. Dust sprinkled from the ceiling. Rella and Bella had draped themselves over Ver's shoulders, admiring the rose on his chest but not daring to touch it. Ver's hand was still in Tuffle's hair. Neither of them had said anything. Karen worked on clearing the hardening lava away. An hour passed in this fashion. The rose on Ver's chest shone with a golden light before dimming.
The rumbling in the tunnels stopped. Lindis walked out of the chamber's entrance with her hair frayed and charred, the clothes she wore in tatters, and dried blood caking her body. There was no expression on her face.
"Is it over?"
Karen asked as he peeked his head into the entrance. There was nothing to see. A pile of rubble had blocked off the opening to Stella's room.
"Yes," Linda said.
She glanced at Ver and Toffel before walking away.
"It's over."
39.
"Exactly what is this?"
Grimmy asked, as he flew through the sky. Lindis and Ver were sitting on his head, with Rella and Bella sitting on Ver's shoulders. A swarm of fairies flew behind Grimmy, blotting out the sun for the people on the ground.
"I feel like a mother duck with her chicks in tow,"
Lindis snorted.
"Blame the new fairy king over here," she said, and placed her hand on Ver's head. "They'll be following him like moths to a flame until the queen is born."
Ver scratched his cheek. "At least there's plenty of space for them in Kona Graish. But we'll have to defeat the Guardian for their birth flowers first."
"That shouldn't be an issue," Linda said. "It's probably disabled if it's a construct, or it'll submit to you if it's biological. I do wish Karen teleported the room somewhere more convenient, though."
A vein appeared on her forehead.
"Where'd he put it?"
Bella asked, peeling her eyes away from the rose.
"On top of his tower in Kona Graish."
"Literally," Linda sighed.
"I just hope a breeze doesn't tip it over. My skeletons have been telling me about the panic it induces every time it wobbles."
"Ah,"
Bella said, and lowered her gaze.
"And here I was thinking he looked pretty cool when he teleported the whole room away."
Silence fell over the group, save for the chatter of the swarm behind them.
"I should have gone with Toffel," Ver said as he looked up at the sky. "And bring this many fairies back to Niffle?"
Lindis asked as she gestured behind herself.
"Not happening. I have a feeling she doesn't want to see any fairies for a long time."
"What does it mean to be the Demon Lord?" Toffel asked. She was sitting on the edge of her bed with her hands clenched into fists on her lap. Her head hung as she stared at the floor, dark circles underneath her eyes. Dustin and Mina were sitting on chairs across from her. Dustin frowned.
"Toffel? What happened? Answer me!"
Toffel's voice cracked when she yelled. She raised her head and glared at the duo across from her. Tears threatened to fall from her eyes.
"Calm down, Toffel," Mina said. "We're just worried about
this just one question, if you're not going to answer it,"
Toffel said in a low voice as her horns glowed silver. She shouted as a circle appeared underneath Dustin and Mina.
"Then get out!"
Their bodies disappeared, along with the chairs and carpet. Toffel panted, glaring at the exposed marble floor in the center of the room. She threw her body across her bed and buried her face in her pillow. A minute passed before the door to her room creaked open by an inch.
"Excuse me," Redder said and rubbed his nose. "I couldn't help it over here."
He shut his mouth when Toffel raised her head and glared through the crack in the door with puffy eyes.
"A demon lord is the demon who holds the respect of the people."
Redder gulped and pushed the door open further.
"Whether by power or charisma."
Toffel sat up and pointed at her desk's chair.
"Sit."
Redder nodded and took a seat.
"The Demon Lord is the one who guides the direction of the kingdom. She is the one who makes the important choices. To go to war, or seek an armistice. To abolish laws, or to create new ones. Everything a Demon Lord does is to ensure the continuation of the demon race. I don't know what happened to you to make you..."
"I killed people,"
Toffel said. Tears rolled down her cheeks.
"Thousands of people. Humans, demons, men, women, children."
Her voice cracked as her tears dripped from her chin. Redder's brow furrowed as he frowned.
"That
I'm a monster. Tuffle lowered her head and stared at her palms. The setting sun colored her hands red, like blood.
Aren't I?
No, Rutter said.
His armor clanked as he kneeled by the side of the bed.
I've fought in too many battles to keep track of before I became a sentry in the royal castle. I've seen my fair share of monsters. You're not one of them. All I see in front of me is a scared child who feels remorse for what she's done. Monsters don't feel remorse.
Tuffle sniffled and raised her head. She turned away from Redder's sincere gaze.
I'd like to be left alone.
Understood, Redder said and saluted as he stood up. Let me know if you need anything.
He left the room and closed the door. He sighed as soft sobs echoed in the room behind him. Michelle and her mother were standing over an open white sarcophagus. They were wearing black dresses, uncharacteristic of the Pope's family. This isn't real, right? Michelle asked. Tell me it's not true. She grabbed her mother's hand.
Mom?
I'm sorry, Michelle, Marissa said and hugged her daughter. Lines streaked down her face where her tears had ruined her makeup.
I'm sorry.
Michelle's body trembled.
How?
Her arms hung by her side. Inside the sarcophagus, there was a blanket. The top was peeled back, revealing the Pope's mostly burnt face.
That's the strongest. He's blessed by the spirits. He talked to me just a few hours ago. He can't be dead.
Michelle broke out of her mother's embrace and kneeled beside the side of the sarcophagus, clasping her hands together while chanting. A white light enveloped the burnt corpse, but dispersed without any effect. She chanted again and again to no avail as tears sprang to her eyes while her mother cried silently behind her.
I promise I won't be bad anymore. I won't drink. I won't run off and disobey you. I'll pray twice as much without complaining.
Her voice quavered, and her hands turned white from gripping the side of the sarcophagus.
So please, Dad, get up. Please, get up.
Michelle, her mother hiccuped and placed her hand on her daughter's shoulder. Michelle flinched as her mother's hand made contact.
Who did it?
She asked, and gritted her teeth as she wiped her tears away with the backs of her hands.
Who?
It was me.
Michelle whirled around and glared at the doorway. The human king was leaning against the door's frame with his shoulders slouched, his crown lopsided.
I gave the order to have him killed. If you want to blame someone, then blame me. It is my duty to protect the people as the king, and I did what had to be done. Forgive me, Rudolph.
It's been a month since the last worm outbreak, Gil said.
He was standing in front of an altar, dressed in the white robe that represented the Pope's station.
I think it's safe to say we have fully exterminated them, Your Majesty.
Good. But we must maintain vigilance.
Randall said with a sigh, after seeing Michelle and her mother in the basement of the temple crying over their lost family member. His own loss felt even greater. His purple robes had grease stains decorating the sleeves and belly. Dark circles surrounded his eyes, while wrinkles lined his forehead. Bits of food were entangled in his beard by the corner of his mouth.
And how are your duties as the Pope? Are you able to handle them?
Yes, Your Majesty, Gale said and nodded his head once. However, I think making Michelle a bishop may be a bit too much for her to handle. Her father just passed away, and she...
Work conquers sorrow,
Randall said and waved his hand.
It's best to keep her busy to distract her from her loss.
Gale swept his gaze over the king's unkempt body.
Are you really want to say that?
Pardon my abruptness, he said, and lowered his head. But how are you doing now that Rudolph is gone? Isn't it about time we hold a proper funeral for him?
I'm fine, Gale, Randall said as his eyes narrowed. The country requires me to be strong,
Holding a funeral at this moment after our people have been terrorized by the worms would be inappropriate. When we recover, we'll hold a national holiday to honor the dead. We know that the worms can lie dormant for up to 2 months from our sources and fuselage. We'll construct a memorial as a reminder of our resilience, then.
I understand.
More importantly, Randall said as he leaned against his scepter, using it like a cane. Have you figured out the effects of the formation?
Gale shook his head.
It seems like something that only the popes have knowledge of, but unfortunately the knowledge wasn't passed on to me. I think it's best to leave it alone, however. I have noticed a marked decrease in the amount of mana surrounding it. It's most likely due to us burning the crystals from the vault to aid us in eliminating the worm-infested hosts. Let's hope nothing too catastrophic occurs when the formation runs out of energy.
Ver was sitting on top of the head of a giant purple spider, facing Lindis, who was sitting on its butt. The two were surrounded by the fairy's birth flowers in the room Karen had teleported back to Konegreisch. The purple spheres illuminating the room were now golden, and splotches of gold decorated the purple leaves of the flowers. The spider's body tensed as the walls around them trembled and the floor wobbled. Faint screams could be heard outside of the room, coming in from the newly added windows. Linda sighed and channeled her mana as a whirlwind swirled around the earthen block, stabilizing its position above the narrow tower.
"That's the third earthquake in a month," Linda said, and looked out a window. People were running about, ducking underneath shelters made of bear skeletons. "We're really going to have to figure out what to do about this room."
Bird didn't respond, as he played with the hairs near the spider's eyes. It was furry like a tarantula. He raised his head.
"You said that you were going to tell me why once I beat Mr. Skelly in a war," he said, and crossed his arms over his chest. "I won."
Lindis raised an eyebrow.
"You really beat him? Let me ask."
She closed her eyes, and an image of the undead skeleton leader appeared in her head.
"Did Ver beat you in a mock war?"
A moment passed, and Lindis chuckled.
"Sorry, Ver. Mr. Skelly says he technically didn't beat me. He used his soldiers to win against my soldiers, so it can't be said that he, as a person, beat me. I did not lose. Skeletons never lose."
Linda smirked.
"You'll have to try again next time." "That's not fair," Burr said and pouted.
"Skeletons never fight fair," Linda said and laughed. "And stop pouting. You've been hanging around the fairies too much."
"Then how am I supposed to make you tell me?" Ver asked and knit his brow.
Why had Lindis betrayed Stella?
"You don't,"
Lindis said, and brushed her hair behind her ear as she stood up. "So stop asking.
It's a boring story anyway, and a certain dragon would probably kill me if I told you."
"Who?"
"Your mother."
Ver tilted his head.
"Grimmy?"
Lindis burst out laughing before she walked away, careful not to step on the flowers on her way out.
"The nightmares again?"
Toffle nodded and plopped herself down onto her grandmother's bed. Her grandmother sat up with a groan and wrapped her arms around Toffle.
"You poor child,"
her grandmother said and rubbed her granddaughter's back.
"Maybe you should take that strange creature for a walk."
"Strange creature?" Toffle asked, and broke away from her grandmother's embrace.
"Yes,"
her grandmother said, and pointed at a winged creature sitting on Toffle's head.
"That one? The thing on your head. Have you not noticed?"
"On my head?" Toffle asked as she raised her hand. She squeezed something soft. The creature squealed before hissing and ruffling her hair with its hooves.
"Fluffykins? How did you—" "I don't understand. What? When did this happen?"
Toffle sighed and held Fluffykins in front of her face.
"Well,
You're Ver's granddaughter, after all, so I can't really judge you by normal standards. Fluffykin stuck her tongue out before waving her hooves at Toffle. All right,